Welcome to a new week of Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of our society, to those who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, academic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. We will search elsewhere for answers. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is toll-free 877-376-45. We're going to begin this morning where we ended our week last week in Ferguson, Missouri. The first statement is from Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri, who said that the police response in Ferguson needs to be demilitarized. Speaking to about 100 people in Missouri, Ms. McCaskill said that the response to the protests had become the problem rather than a solution. And my friends, that really is the issue in Ferguson. It's not about racism. It's about the militarization of our police. What we saw is the immediate escalation to assault vehicles, assault rifles, and massive and harsh crowd control techniques deployed by men in military uniforms with black jackets, with military helmets, with military weapons emerging from military vehicles by the scores. And some of the pictures, I don't know if you've done this, but you should look at some of the pictures of the militarization of the police response. And there's pictures where 8 or 9 people with their rifles pointed, and their assault rifles pointed forward, are charging. And there's one place where it's like a 20-year-old woman that's sitting there with her hands up, and here they come, a score of them, looking like a military assault team. Running after. There's other pictures of them riding down the street with their guns pointed and they're lobbing tear gas from assault vehicles. Pictures where there's scores of these black-suited and helmeted men opposing the citizens of the community. It's a very serious problem. It's the exact same thing we saw in Boston. And rather than besmirch the integration of alphabet soup of federal agents and the army descending upon Boston and turning it into a police state in Massachusetts, everyone sang the Star Spangled Banner and Boston Strong as if to reinforce this grotesque abuse of power. Missouri announced over the weekend that it is sending the National Guard to the town of Ferguson as protests escalate over the police shooting of an unarmed black teenager. You see, the folks in Ferguson, two-thirds of which are African-American, had a great opportunity, one of their own, could have been and should have been a hero. When the captain of the highway patrol for that area was called in to replace the police along with his men. And this man dearmed his men, took off the helmets, took off the flak jackets, removed the guns, and walked through the community. He should have been a hero. He should have been accepted as a hero. That would have been the right thing to do, to promote him as a hero. But no, he was played for the fool by the likes of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson as they scream racism. And Ferguson has turned back into a hellhole of violence. But nothing says militarization more than bringing in the National Guard. We went from bad to worse. Governor Jay Dixon signed the order to help restore peace and order. Yes, nothing says peace more than the military armed to the hilt. The independent autopsy found that Michael Brown, 18, had been shot by an officer 6 times, twice in the head. Gunpowder residue was not found, shot at close range. But that may change once Mr. Bandon has access to the clothes Mr. Brown was wearing at the time of his death, a newspaper has reported. So he was shot six times. The gun that Wilson had in his possession was probably 9 or 10 rounds in the magazine. They are actually trained to, when they engage their weapon, to shoot to kill and to unload on the threat. So what happened here is a consequence of how Wilson, the officer, had been trained. Now, in my view, there are several things that are important on this. One is that if there was no blast, traces of the blast on Brown's body, since it is high speed and fine particulate and absolutely is going to penetrate the T-shirt and shorts that Brown was wearing, it means that he was not killed execution style, which is the claim of those trying to turn this into a racist event. He was not killed execution style. That's a fact. So that claim needs to be removed. The second is that we would be vastly better off restricting the arms that cops carry. They ought to deploy with non-mortal force. There are some really wonderful options, by the way. Wonderful in the sense of effective options, I should say, not wonderful. In fact, during our program on Friday, Scott actually emailed me a fellow who he wanted to advertise on GCN because he made a product that Scott thought would be worthy, was worthy. I agree. And that is that this fellow, and it's called StunGun, I think, .com, or MyStunGun. Yeah, MyStunGun.com is the site. And what it offers is ballistic pepper spray. So pepper spray that where there's a multi-shot magazine, so just like the gun that the officer was using, that shoots high-velocity pepper capsules, and it comes with everything from, you know, light laser sights to zero in on the target, and it will decommission whoever is the threat. It would have ended the conflict had a pepper spray gun been drawn on the perpetrator, Brown in this case. He would still be alive. He'd be now facing trial for robbery and assault, but he'd still be alive. And so it is a way to give the police the opportunity to protect themselves, to protect others, while not taking a life. You know, if they get in a situation where they're battling a downtown drug gang that's armed with automatic weapons, their pistol is inadequate anyway. And it's not that they have a tactical advantage with a pistol. And in a gunfight in a highly populated area, a urban area, the best thing to do is to withdraw. It's not to engage. We don't want to encourage them to engage. We don't want to increase the power of their weapons so that they're more prone to engage under those circumstances. Retreat is the best response under those circumstances. And there is no way you can equip them on their body with the same caliber of weapons the criminals have. So that's mitigated. In a vast preponderance of situations, everybody is better off with a non-lethal force. And then to have in the trunk or someplace else that's not readily accessible but available, something more powerful? Should that be the only option to protect the lives of civilians or the officer? And unfortunately, we as a nation have gone the other way. And all of our surplus from having lost the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, we're taking that hardware, and rather than just disposing of it, we are bringing it back and providing it to police departments around the country. That's why there's a huge increase in SWAT teams, which are military assault teams. A huge increase in the caliber of weaponry that they're deploying. And all of it deprives people of life and liberty. We're going in the wrong direction. Now, in an interview with the U.S. media, Mr. Brown's mother, Mike Brown's mother, said that the only way to restore peace in Ferguson was by arresting Mr. Wilson and making him accountable for his actions. But at this point, we don't know that Mr. Wilson has done anything wrong. You can't indict him because he's a white guy and you don't like him. You know, your son, Mrs. Brown, committed assault and robbery moments before he was killed. Now, while neither assault nor robbery justify murdering him and hunting him down as for sport, but that's not what occurred. And so if you want accountability, Mrs. Brown, I know that you're sad that your son is dead, but you're living an illusion that your son was a good boy. Good boys don't rob stores. Good boys don't steal cigars. Good boys don't assault store owners. Good boys don't then gloat by walking down the middle of the street with their case of cigars. He's not a good boy. He's now a dead boy. He's not a victim. He caused his own death. This is really the same as the case with Trayvon Martin. He was not a good boy. And he contributed to his own demise. He was not a victim. I'm sorry. I wish it was different. But it's not. Captain Ron Johnson said protesters had shot at officers and thrown petrol bombs, Molotov cocktails, before the five-hour curfew started at midnight local time. He described the violence as premeditated criminal acts to provoke a reaction. A number of people were injured during the unrest. So, while I do not see the attempted arrest and the killing of Mike Brown as a racist act, I don't think there's even a hint of racism in it. I do see the response as not only racist, but I agree, premeditated criminal acts. When protesters are now shooting at the cops and throwing Molotov cocktails at them. We have Glenn on the line. It's a mess, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's to think it all began with a simple act of attempted highway robbery by a shopkeeper.
Highway robbery by a shopkeeper? How was the shopkeeper?
Anybody trying to charge $50 for a box of Swishers is kind of highway robbery.
when they labeled those small stores convenience stores, you noticed that they didn't call them discount stores. They didn't call them money saving stores. A store like that has to charge 50% more than they paid for the product, or the economics don't work. You know, all of those kind of convenience stores. And I know you were just saying this to be funny, but the fact is that it helps people to understand the nature of a business. A convenience store is only there for one of two reasons. One is that a national chain doesn't think that the investment of a store and personnel in an area is likely to be profitable, and that's why there are very few traditional supermarkets in crime-ridden areas. A convenience store is just there for, you can't even say necessities, but it's there for the kind of things that people want on an impulse, which is typically alcohol and cigarettes, in addition to newspapers, magazines, and junk food. It's what they supply for the most part, and they supply those things at twice what they pay for them, which is a 50% margin, because that's the economics of that particular business. But the store owners of such businesses typically work the most hours in those stores, because you can't afford, with the volume they do, to have other employees other than, for the most part. And in addition to that, that's very, very high crime. They are the most likely to be robbed.
Right. Right. It's amazing that, you know, they can find anybody intrepid enough to take on those risks, you know.
Yeah, the entrepreneurial spirit is strong in a lot of people. A lot of people just have a sense that I don't want to be a parasite on society. I'm willing to work. I want to work. I will work. And they make an investment in these communities. Now, this particular guy, I feel so sorry for the store owner. When the police released the report that Brown had robbed him and assaulted him, he was scared for his life immediately. He says, I know these people. You know, I do business every day with these people. I know how they're going to respond to the beginning of this incident, now being a robbery and assault. He says, they're going to come after me. My store is in jeopardy. My life is in jeopardy.
Well, and come to find out, looted, I believe.
Several times. He was right. At one time, I think there were 200 looters surrounding the store. In fact, it got so bad in Ferguson here over the weekend that the police had no interest in protecting any store. The police were wholly disengaged from protecting stores and store owners. The stores and store owners had to take weapons and brandish them to prevent the looting of their stores, and those who were not willing to shoot had their stores looted, and it occurred throughout the community of Ferguson.
I find it lamentable because, you know, I see, you know, these lootings go on, you know, when a city's sports team wins a championship, and these types of people are just total vermin. You know, that do the looting.
Yeah, you know, I hate the term in this case of these kinds of people, because we know that the protesters.
No, I mean looters. I don't care.
I know.
Looters.
I know.
I mean, just didn't have any stripes.
I agree. And in this case, these looters are about 90% African American. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Having a conversation with Glenn about what happened in Ferguson. I want to share another thought with you, Glenn. The autopsy, which revealed that Brown was shot six times, twice in the head, but that there was no gunpowder residue associated with any of those shots, proves that neither story is credible. The story that has been provided by Dorian Johnson, that he was killed execution style, that's not credible. If he was killed execution style and two of the shots were to the head and the man was only wearing a loose-fitting T-shirt and a pair of loose-fitting shorts and flaps, there absolutely would have been gunpowder residue on the body. So the execution style killing of the witness, Dorian Johnson, is absolutely untrue. Now Dorian Johnson has committed a crime. He's provided false testimony. Second, the police's account, where they say that that Brown became a threat because he was trying to grab the officer's gun while assaulting him. That is incredible. Because if he was trying to grab the officer's gun, and the officer grabbed the gun to keep it from Brown, and then fired at Brown from inside the car where he was pushed, then there would be, that shot would have been at very close range. If that shot was more than 2 feet from Brown's body, then that story of Brown reaching for the gun and fighting for the gun and the officer shooting to defend himself under those circumstances is absolutely not credible. And the idea that he needed to continue to shoot because Brown was a threat to him is also false. So what we have here now is two false presentations of the events that occurred. And while it's sad that a life has been taken and another life has been ruined, since I'm wholly opposed to this being a racist issue, and I'm wholly opposed to the response of those in Ferguson, I'm also wholly opposed to the mindset of police that do fabricate evidence to justify their misdeeds. And in this case, they did.
I don't know if you saw the speaking engagement that the state police, the trooper had gave to a group of people in an auditorium. Did you catch any of that on TV?
I didn't listen to
it. He did a wonderful job of providing a moderating influence about all this. And,
you're talking about the highway patrolman?
Highway patrol captain. Thank you.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yeah, I did. Oh, I did listen to him. He should be a hero.
Yeah, his way he spoke, he was very non-inflammatory. He spoke of his own son and all that sort of thing. Here's a man with actual street cred. He's got the family. He's got the job.
A man who should be a hero and who should be elevated in stature, who the community in Ferguson ought to be listening to. They rejected. In favor of the poisoned tongue of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson.
They allowed him to be trunk because this tells you that somewhere in this, there are those who, for their own gain, do not want moderation and peace part of the situation.
Correct.
So they deliberately want to capitalize on this. As the looters, this is like good old Rahm Emanuel, don't let a good crisis go to waste. The looters are, capitalize on it one way, and the politicos capitalize on it another way. And the one who really has a reason to care about the community and to actually bring about peace is thwarted. It's unconscionable.
Yeah. What's interesting, too, is that the consequence here is that the police have no desire whatsoever to do their jobs anymore. Let me share this snippet from an article. Looters in Ferguson, Missouri were met with no police resistance Friday night, as store owners say they were forced to protect their businesses with their own guns. I think the first message is to remind all law enforcement that they are hired to serve and protect. And if they're going to sit back and watch looting, they're not serving us. They're not protecting us, said one of the store owners. A reporter from the station tweeted that police cars were seen driving past the stores as they were being looted and did not respond. Two store owners standing outside their businesses holding guns told Fox 2 Now that they called 911, and they were sent from one police agency to another, and no one responded. One of the owners, with a large black gun resting on his shoulders, told the station that police were lined up blocks from the looting, and yet they did not engage the looters, making off with large boxes from these stores. There's no police. We trusted the police to protect us, and they did not do their job.
I'm not surprised.
So what are we paying them? What are we paying them for? Why are we arming them? What are we paying them for? Well, you know, it's almost like you're standing back and saying, you know, if you're going to attack us, and there's a chance that we could be accused of racism and have to, undergo what Wilson is going to have to undergo, we're just not going to engage. But if you're not going to engage, why are we paying you?
Right. Well, like, at least have the decency to quit. But
if you're not going to engage, have the decency to quit. Absolutely.
We're just going to sit over here on the sidelines and, wait until this one's mopped up, then we'll come back on duty when it's less threatening. In terms of police professionalism here also, I don't know anything about policing, and thank goodness I have never had, don't have that much in the way of interaction with the police, except the occasional speeding ticket I think I had 3 years ago, and which was handled very nicely. But if I were a policeman driving up the street and I saw these two and felt I had identified them, I would think my tendency would be to drive by as if I hadn't noticed them. And then about half a block up, I'd radio in for quiet backup to be deployed. I'd park my vehicle, get out, and make sure I had my taser on me.
Right.
And then just kind of, wait and watch,
right.
Make sure they didn't turn off. Kind of gradually close the distance on them, wait for my backup to arrive, and then confront them taser in hand.
Right. Or better better yet, because tasers only have a very limited range, use those pepper guns.
Well, whatever. My point
I'm going to tell you, the looters are going to drop their big boxes that they stole if they're hit with pepper.
Right.
You're protecting.
My point here is that don't why did he engage them in some so awkward a position? I mean, you don't have to be a tactician to figure out that. You see this in movies all the time. The cops walk up to somebody and from 30 yards away they say, "Joe Blow," and he runs. It's like, okay, flank him and close the distance before calling his name.
Yeah, you see, there's a real confusion as to what Wilson knew at the time that he engaged Johnson and Brown.
Yeah, because it was another policeman who viewed the footage.
Right. It was another policeman that viewed the footage, but ATB, is I think what they call them, had already been called out. It was that a convenience store had not only been robbed, but that the owner had been assaulted, and they gave the description of a 6'4", 250-pound...
Given that there weren't 20 or 30 people in the vicinity fitting that description, he knew who he was viewing.
So the cop left. Wilson was engaged trying to help save the life of a little child that had breathing problems, and getting him safely transitioned into ambulance care so he could be taken to the hospital. That's where Wilson was when he received on his radio this report that a convenience store had been robbed and there was an assault, and that he met that depiction. He left the home where he was trying to take care of that boy with that in his mind, and then as he was driving, he saw two people walking down the street that not only matched the description, but they were walking down the middle of the street, and he asked them to get out of the middle of the street and to move over to the sidewalk. And that's how the incident began. And so,
I still don't understand the approach. Why would you not park your car, get yourself in a position, wait for backup, and then get a definitive close on it? Awkward, bumbling approach to it?
Yeah, because he drove by them as they were in the middle of the street and told them to move on to the sidewalk. They gave him lip and continued to walk down the street. He backed up his car to engage them. That was his mistake. He should not have done that. At that point, what he should have done is say, two individuals matching the description of the suspects, now just a few minutes walk away from the store, carrying a box of cigars, dressed as exactly as they were described in the APB, are walking down the middle of the street. Here's my location. I need backup. Because you already know that the suspect, matching this description, carrying the box of these cigars, wearing this outfit, is violent.
Right. Well,
you know that
he, you know, every, You close them from, you know, you go ahead of them, come back. Now, and the thing is, Brown is not a boy. He's a young man of voting age, of age to enter the military, but he's too physically large to be inducted into the military.
Yeah.
He exceeds the specs for, you know, military induction.
Yeah.
But he's not a boy. He is a young man behaving criminally.
Yeah.
You know.
Although the police are the ones that, and I think that the officer did overreact, and I think his testimony is. So I don't want to come down on either side here. I want to be opposed to both. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. Mm-hmm. Police Chief Jackson's decision to spell out the allegations that Brown committed robbery and his releasing of the surveillance video angered attorneys for Brown's family and many in the community, including U.S. Representative Lacey Clay. That would be a congressman. Earlier Friday, the Democratic congressman took a bullhorn and told protesters, quote, they have attempted to taint the investigation. They are trying to influence the jury pool by the stunt they pulled today, end quote. Now,
That's ridiculous. It's going to require a change of venue anyway. Not that it's going to help because of the media.
U.S. Representative William Lacey Clay ought to now be charged with inciting the looting and the rioting that took place. Everyone
exactly.
that has been injured since he made that statement, every store that has been robbed, he himself ought to be indicted because what he did is worse than screaming fire in a crowded theater where people trample each other on the way out. He is inspired crimes. Another family attorney, now this would be for the Browns, Benjamin Crump, said police, quote, are choosing to disseminate information that is very strategic to try to help them justify the execution-style killing. This attorney is the same guy that turned the Trayvon Martin case into a cause célèbre for racism. Well, Benjamin Crump, you're a liar. There was no execution-style killing. And when is evidence not germane to assessing what occurred? We have Nick, our good friend, who's calling in from Wisconsin about Ferguson. What do you think, my friend?
Well, I just think how it's funny what you guys suggest for those officers to do when they drive by those guys and, you know, saw the guys that matched the description. You're saying that they should drive by and then call for backup?
Mm-hmm.
Two guys versus two guys, even if
no, it was one guy. It was one guy in the squad car.
Even then, I mean, you really want more backup? What are you expecting? The whole department come and arrest just one single guy? Isn't this?
Well,
what are you saying, Nick? No. You're going to another extreme, Nick. I was saying that drive by them nonchalantly so as to appear as though you hadn't noticed them. Casually call for quiet backup to be on its way. Another one or possibly two other officers. The likelihood of these two reacting violently or running is very great. Okay, so the idea is drive past, park the car, get up a block or so up the street, position yourself in advantageously to encounter them, have your taser ready, and then when your backup arrives, the two or three of you can, you know, approach them simultaneously, and then you have better chance of success and less chance of running.
Right, and much less chance of a violent encounter, because if it's two of you and the one guy is very large and you're trying to arrest a very large man who has just been violent, the likelihood of that turning out well, where the man says, "Oh, sure, I'll put my hands up in the air and you can go ahead and handcuff me," thank you very much, is really slim.
Do they have to unlock the trunk to get the taser out from over there, or is it on their?
No.
Most cops have a taser on their belt.
So then, what's the problem, big or small? They all,
right.
they all drop down really fast.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree. Listen, I would agree if, in fact, the cops had, and I shouldn't say most. The cops that I had, when I paid attention, you know, if I've been in a position where I can look at a cop and see what do they have, a very high percentage have tasers. I don't know if these folks in Ferguson had tasers or not. If they had tasers, that would have been a very logical answer. I happen to like what you're saying here. If they had, rather than a deadly weapon, they had their primary weapon was a pepper gun, they could have accomplished the exact same thing. Whether it be the taser or a pepper gun, either one would have been sufficient to subdue these two men if they chose to be aggressive.
So what I see, they don't need no backup, they just need more training.
And a different group of weapons, non-lethal weapons,
well,
as the first option, not lethal weapons.
So, I mean,
well,
that's a...
Why is it wise to attempt to encounter two people, one of whom is very large and has acted violently? Why do you keep saying they don't need backup? If the police are engaging a known violent criminal, they always try to do so with two or more officers. I just don't get why you keep saying he doesn't need backup.
We don't hire average Joe Blow in to serve in the police department. They go through some sort of training. Therefore, they should be equipped and better trained to actually meet the resistance in the face of this big guy.
I just think your idea here is exceedingly
I think both positions are reasonable. I think that had the police, if police generally were armed with non-lethal weapons like pepper guns and like stun guns, and they had been trained to deploy them first, then one person could have prevailed. That does not, however, change
not
the fact.
Not if they fled.
Yeah, but now then the other choices, I would have done what you're suggesting. Under those circumstances, I'd have drove casually by, parked my car 100 yards further up the street, called for backup. Been a safer approach.